and gentlemen, let's go.
Let's go.
We ain't got no time to waste. Let's go.
Let's go.
You are now listening to Jason Anderson, and you are in the zone.
You're in the zone with Jason Anderson on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You know, friends, so many people have wished me congratulations on a 67-year career in baseball, and they've wished me a wonderful retirement with my family. And now, all I can do is tell you what I wish for you. May God give you for every storm a rainbow, for every tear a smile, for every care a promise, and a blessing in each trial. For every problem life seems a faithful friend to share. For every sigh, a sweet song and an answer for each prayer. You and I have been friends for a long time, but I know in my heart that I've always needed you more than you've ever needed me. And I'll miss our time together more than I can say. But you know what? There will be a new day and eventually a new year. And when the upcoming winter gives way to spring, rest assured, once again, it will be time for Dodger baseball. So this is Vin Scully wishing you a very pleasant good afternoon wherever you may be.
You're in the zone on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
What a great slash sad slash inspiring way to start the show on a Wednesday from some of the best delivered words by one of the best at delivering words in Vin Scully, who passed away last night. His final goodbye on the broadcast, that was what you heard there. There are a lot of Vin Scully clips that we will try to play today throughout the show, because Vin Scully, you think of him, you immediately think of baseball. How many people have something that are so synonymous and identifiable with something bigger than them? When you just simply say that name, you think of, you might think of teams or like a play or something if we're talking about bigger athletes or something like that. But you hear Vin Scully and it's baseball. It's the romance of baseball. It's also the soundtrack of a lot of people, including mine, late night falling asleep, doing something else while the West Coast game was on ESPN and it was Vin Scully or whichever network that came on and it was the voice of Vin Scully that you heard as you were either going to sleep or doing something else with the baseball game in the background. That was the soundtrack for a lot of people, and obviously for Dodger fans, whether that be Brooklyn or LA, the soundtrack of their fandom would be Vin Scully. So a tough night last night, a sad night last night, as Vin Scully passes away and lived an absolutely magnificent life, lived an incredible life. And there are so many things that are amazing about Vin Scully, besides him being, you know, a peach of a human. One of the things that I saw last night that's just amazing to think about, Vin Scully called Dodgers games with players born in 1916, Preacher Row, and 1996, Julio Urias. He called Dodger games that included players born 80 years apart.
Incredible.
Unbelievable with Vin Scully. So, boy, we got a lot of stuff to get into today. 913-912-4810 is the text line to be a part of the show. 913-912-4810. We'll talk with Jeff Montgomery coming up in about 20 minutes from now. The Royals have an afternoon game today, the rubber match against the White Sox. Brady Singer on the mound. Looking forward to seeing what Brady Singer can do and if he can continue this back-to-back stretch of the 22 strikeouts and only a couple of walks, if he can do that today against the White Sox, and Lance Lynn on the mound. So we'll talk with Monty mainly about the trade deadline and yesterday and what a clubhouse is like, what players go through when their name is brought up and talked about, and all day when it's being discussed as, you know, you're out there warming up and you're wearing a jersey and your name is in the lineup, and then you head back in and you take that jersey off, you get on a plane and you put on another jersey the next day. It's an odd thing for anybody to go through, and it's just sort of accepted in Major League Baseball at the trade deadline. And just like, well, okay, he got traded there, he got traded there, he got traded there. Okay, let's examine the trades. Let's look at grades for trades and things like that. Oh, he's now playing for that team. It's an odd sort of acceptance, but they are professionals. You understand that with the job. It is part of the gig. They make a lot of money to have to do that. And then you hear the bittersweet part of it, like Cam Gallagher last night, who was emotional before the game and talking about that he was heading into the clubhouse to say goodbye to Whit Merrifield. And before he got to Whit, Mike Matheny cut him off and said, hey, I need to talk to you. And he's traded to the Padres. And Gallagher was very emotional talking about his teammates and the Royals organization and being around them and what his career has been like, while also then acknowledging the excitement of the potential of playing in a postseason and being on a team like the Padres, who are one of the favorites now to win the World Series, certainly to go to the playoffs. And Cam Gallagher is going to be a guy on the team that, you know, backup catcher, defensive catcher, very good at framing, has been, you know, complimented for his ability to do that throughout his career, handling a pitching staff. Pitchers like throwing to Cam Gallagher on the mound. So a guy who I think would be on the rosters for the postseason and however far the Padres get. So that bittersweet moment that you see from guys. And then I do wonder if there's a bittersweet moment of somebody that wasn't traded. And like, you know, I'm kind of excited about going somewhere else and pitching in the post and the potential of, you know, playing in the playoffs and pitching in October. And then you're not traded. And it's like, well, now I'm playing out the string this year. But it's familiarity. It's the same guys I know in the clubhouse, same guys I go to breakfast and lunch and maybe after games and road trips and all of that stuff. So nothing in my life has really changed. Or even at all, not even really. Nothing in my life has changed if I'm not traded. So it's that interesting both sides. Don't want to be traded, but also maybe would like to be traded. Different viewpoints. We'll talk with Jeff Montgomery about that. Also what he saw from Daniel Lynch the other night against the White Sox and out-dueling Michael Kopech. What does Daniel Lynch and Patrick Mahomes, what do they have in common? Daniel Lynch and Patrick Mahomes, what do they have in common?
Both probably worse at their job with blisters.
No, Mahomes can just switch hands. Lynch
can't.
That's
a great point.
Yep,
great
that's
point.
Right. Name a first down Daniel Lynch has thrown with his right hand. Because I can name a first down Mahomes has done with his left hand.
Beards. Both professional throwers.
That is one thing. You are right about
that.
It's
not the one you're looking for.
But it is right. I mean, that technically you're not wrong. They both are professional throwers by teams in Kansas, with teams in Kansas City.
Ooh, that's another one. They were playing Kansas City. Yeah. I didn't think of that.
Beards, any idea what Daniel Lynch and Patrick Mahomes now have in common after Monday night?
Having in common? I was going to say the thing they have different is only one of them is going to be playing in October.
That is definitely something they will not have in common. Do they have games in October?
I think the Royals think do the play Royals baseball in October.
Have a couple
November.
Of games.
Yeah, first week.
November.
First
there we
week.
Go.
Well,
November.
Doesn't mean Daniel Lynch will start because there's only a couple of games in October, right?
Five games.
Okay, he'll start.
They
as
end
long
the
as he's
season
healthy.
With six games in yeah. Cleveland.
It's like the, oh my goodness, that's terrible.
Oof.
It's like when Mick Schaefer, when the Chiefs were struggling and Mick Schaefer guaranteed the Chiefs would be playing games in January.
People lost their mind on him.
Not realizing
I think he said they play at least two games
play at
in
least,
January.
That's what it was. They're going to play at least two games in January.
Because the regular season goes into the second week of January now.
So here's what they have in common as a quick aside.
Tell me about it.
Daniel Lynch on Monday out-dueling Michael Kopech. Right. Okay. It wasn't a no-hitter or anything crazy like that, but out-dueling Michael Kopech on the mound against that guy has that in common with Patrick Mahomes, because in the playoffs in high school, Patrick Mahomes threw a no-hitter to get by, I can't remember what team, with Michael Kopech on the mound, who threw a game in which he gave up only one run.
Incredible.
Mahomes v. Michael Kopech, and freaking Mahomes threw a no-hitter in the playoffs in high school against Michael Kopech on the mound. So
fantastic.
Now he and Daniel Lynch have that in common, at least for one game. They out-dueled the other. Daniel Lynch, not a no-hitter, though, because he doesn't have that Mahomes thingy.
I mean, you know, yet.
Just rises to the occasion.
Maybe he starts wearing the headband under his hat, and all of a sudden, he's got no-hit stuff.
Yeah. So we'll talk with Monty about those things and maybe a thought on Michael Massey. No news yet, right? We haven't seen any news on if they have made any moves. They've got to do it pretty soon. They start in about 3 hours.
Yeah.
Michael Massey was scratched from the game in Omaha yesterday,
And that would be an assumption with Whit Merrifield being traded that he would make his way up to the big league. So we'll see what happens with that. All right, trade deadline came and went yesterday. Let's hear from J.J. Piccolo on his opening statement. J.J. Piccolo here talking with the media last night. Here is J.J. Piccolo's opening statement after the trade deadline came and went. It was Whit Merrifield and Cam Gallagher that were changing teams.
I want to start off first by thanking the players that we've had in our system for so many years. You know, obviously, Whit Merrifield's been a staple in this organization for a really long time, really special player. A lot of great memories with him as a player, and we're thankful for his contributions, as well as Cam Gallagher. I think this was the 11th year Gallagher's in our system. He did a really admirable job for us. He's a winner, and appreciative of everything he did with us as well. So, you know, it was an interesting day. It was a busy day, a lot of late action. I think our scouts did a tremendous job in allowing us to be prepared for whatever may come our way. And at the end of the day, and really at the end of this week, and even say this month, when we look back, we traded five players that were on our 40-man roster. We traded a comp pick, and we were able to acquire 12 players. And when you add those 12 players to our recent draft, I think our organization looks quite different here in the last 2 weeks. So pretty excited about it. Excited about the players we acquired.
So there's J.J. Piccolo in the opening statement. Then took some questions, and one of those questions about, you know, Whit Merrifield and things like that, also talking about the relievers and those things. We can get into the trade deadline and what the Royals did or didn't do. The story to me was Whit Merrifield. It wasn't that the Royals didn't do more. I think people are frustrated with that. There's a frustration that Whit Merrifield wasn't traded the last couple of years when maybe you could have maximized the value a little bit more, although we don't know what teams were offering for Whit Merrifield last year or the year before, if that was even the case. Let's start with this about Merrifield and the Royals and legacy and all of that stuff. Make no mistake that the point where it has come to where Whit Merrifield was traded and this Royals team had been pacing for, you know, 100 losses for so much of the season. Yesterday was about the Royals organization and the failings of the Royals organization since the World Series. The failings and the delays in the rebuild, in the tear down and reconstruct that shouldn't have taken this long to win this year. It is hoping that a Whit Merrifield gets traded and it's in a position to where there was zero chance they were going to be making the playoffs when it came time to go to Toronto. I don't know what life would have been like if the Royals were in first place in the Central or a game behind in the wild card when they were heading to Toronto. Maybe the same decisions were made. Would have been made. I don't know. We know this. The decision was made by Whit Merrifield and others. By the way, 9 other players that were part of that. Whit talked and said what he said and forever tarnished his legacy in Kansas City. I don't think there's any questions about that. It becomes a lot more complicated in the memory that people will have of Whit Merrifield. And we know that he's true to his word and that he would reassess if he was traded to a different team because he's traded to the Blue Jays. And I don't think there's any way, shape, or form the Blue Jays would have traded if they didn't know that Whit Merrifield would have been vaccinated, because I don't think they want to go Kyrie Irving here and do the home road game like that where Whit just simply stays in like Buffalo.
So I'm going to let you cook through this first segment. But Shi Davidi, I believe, of Sportsnet, did tweet about 4 minutes ago, as for Whit Merrifield, John Schneider says, quote, nothing new, re-vax status. Obviously, we know he wasn't there in Toronto, but totally up to him, and I'm sure that he's had conversations with his family and other people. So, you know, we're leaving that decision up to him.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens with
this. It would be crazy for the Blue Jays to have made this trade with what you just laid out there, but I wanted to give you the latest piece of information, which is, I don't know.
I do wonder if he doesn't get vaccinated, does that change his thoughts or the thoughts around Whit Merrifield in Kansas City if he was like, well, see, I even went to a contender and didn't do that. Like, I don't know. It's complicated, I know that, moving forward. Because on one hand, it's an inspiring career of never giving in or quitting. He was one of the bright spots on bad teams for a while. He played every day, bumps and bruises. He was the epitome of somebody that just simply didn't have all the gifts, but found a way to maximize those gifts, was left off the World Series roster, and all he did was say, you know what, bleep you. I'm going to go put on 20 pounds of muscle and show up the next year and make you keep me on the roster, because not only did you not put me on the 25-man roster for the World Series, you also did not protect me in the Rule 5 draft.
Boy, I forgot about that.
And no team selected me in the Rule 5 draft. Players at that point could have quit. I'm like, wow, there's no value. Instead, he said, you know what, bleep you, and went and put on 20 pounds in the offseason and started driving the baseball more and forced the Royals once, you know, he didn't break camp with the big, I don't remember him breaking camp with the big league club in 16, but ultimately playing 60, 70 games. And then he was Whit Merrifield after that, 2017 and on, and hits and stolen bases and all of those things and defensive versatility. On the other hand, the comments out the door, which makes the city, the fans, the Royals organization kind of feel inadequate. It's just not good enough for him to do that, to really be all in, bought in, do whatever it takes for the city, the fans, the organization, his teammates. Dayton said he was disgusted by the comments. I wonder, as time passes, if memories change, if the hard feelings soften, and more of the what Whit did as a Royals player in a Royals uniform rises to the surface more than what is the current sort of frustration. And even, I would say, hurt by Whit with the comments, because it felt like, okay, we're not good enough for you. He was also a part of the reason why they weren't winning, is his play as well. We'll take a timeout. There's a whole lot more to get into, because I got some thoughts on the trade deadline, the players they acquired, what they did, if they did enough, looking at the entire bigger picture like J.J. Piccolo talked about. We'll hear J.J. Piccolo talk about the reliever market, different players, if they could have moved somebody. They acquired relievers but then didn't move Barlow or Stallmont or anybody else. So we'll talk about that as well. Get in some Chiefs. We'll hear from the Kansas City Chiefs coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. Mick Schaefer as well. More Zone. Jeff Montgomery next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Of course, Denny would step in and go, parking spot, easy to spot, easy to park. Parking spot at KCI.
On Sports Radio 810.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. We head up until 2 o'clock. Time to talk to Jeff Montgomery. He is our Royals insider, Bally Sports Royals Hall of Famer, presented by Sandlot Goods. Monty, what's up, man? How are you, sir?
Oh, doing pretty good. Just getting ready for this final game of the road trip, final game of the White Sox series. Hopefully get a series win here today.
Absolutely. That is certainly the hope and the plan and what the Royals want to do. Take me back to yesterday, and, you know, you've been through so many trade deadlines as a player and then, of course, as a broadcaster as well. What's the feeling in the clubhouse? What goes on during the day? Are players just trying to pass the time and not trying to think about everything that's happening and not trying to follow the story? Is it people maybe searching and trying to see what's going on? What's a clubhouse like on a trade deadline day like yesterday?
I think probably a mixed bag. I think it depends on whether you're one of those players who are potentially in the mix of being traded, or you're a young player just needing to go about your business and maybe interested in what's going on in baseball. But certainly this year's trade deadline brought a lot of activity, a lot of news, and probably more action than I can remember for a long time. And obviously the Soto deal, the blockbuster one of them all, but even some stuff going on, you know, here closer to home with the Cam Gallagher and Whit Merrifield. So there was just a lot of interest going on yesterday all the way up to the deadline.
As a player, what's that like for your name to be thrown out there so often and then on that day not knowing, like, am I getting on a plane? Am I playing tonight? I'm warming up in this jersey, but am I going to take it off and change clothes and pack my bags? What's that like for a player that whose name is mentioned and is talked about and potentially going to be dealt?
Yeah, I go back to my career, and I can just remember a number of years. I can't tell you exactly how many, but probably 3 or 4 years for sure. It seemed like every year I was going to the Atlanta Braves. So, and it was much different then because we didn't have Twitter and the internet and all those, I guess, the accessibility to all the rumors and such, but you still heard them. And I think when you're a player whose name's mentioned, you're certainly aware of it. You can't avoid it, whether you had internet or you didn't have internet. You still had, you know, sports reporters and everybody asking those questions on a kind of regular basis, mm-hmm. leading up to the trade deadline. So you were aware of it, but it was just part of the noise, and you would prepare for your game and go out. And, you know, once the game started, you got the adrenaline going, you had to go out and get some people out. Didn't even think about it. It was just one of those things that was far, you know, far from your mind and just worrying about business at hand. But certainly can be somewhat of a distraction. I think everybody probably handles it a little differently. But I know when your name's mentioned, that's obviously got, you know, it makes you feel good that, you know, there's some desire for your services.
Yeah, Cam Gallagher yesterday felt like, you know, it was bittersweet for him that, you know, he told the story that he was walking in to go say goodbye to Whit Merrifield, and Mike Matheny grabs him and lets him know that actually, you know, you've been traded too. You're heading to San Diego. And he was pretty emotional about it. Just, you know, his time with the organization, be around the guys, but then also the perspective of, you know, I'm going to a team in the Padres that, you know, is supposed to make the postseason and an opportunity to do that. So that bittersweet feeling of, you know, your friends, your teammates, your brothers that you've been around every day and you go through the grind of a season. And now in a snap of a finger, you're gone. You're at a different place and a different group of guys. But also you get a chance to play in the postseason. Like the range of emotions has to be pretty incredible on that day.
Yeah, and I think when you're kind of in the heat of the moment, they're probably a lot different feeling. And Cam Gallagher, as an example, very emotional for him. But when he looks back, say, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, that was just one little segment of his career as a ball player. Those friendships and all the reasons for the emotion, those will still exist because the friends that he met here in Kansas City, the ones he'll establish in San Diego and such, those will be the friends and, you know, those teammates that are special teammates. Those will be the relationships that you'll have long after baseball's over. And I go back to my career, and I met so many great guys along the way and still stay in touch with several and good friends with some. So it's just, you know, it's just the heat of the moment, mm-hmm. and it is very emotional. But, again, you don't realize until it's all said and done that those relationships you build, they last forever.
Visiting with Jeff Montgomery, presented by Sandlot Goods, sandlotgoods.com. Whit Merrifield traded right as the deadline. I mean, Cam Gallagher, the news came down after the trade deadline, but clearly agreed to before. But Whit Merrifield traded to the Blue Jays at the trade deadline. It's complicated with Whit Merrifield now from, you know, a few weeks ago. How do you think, or maybe even just you personally, not even how do you think fans, because everybody's going to have their own opinions, but how do you remember Whit Merrifield throughout his career with the Royals?
I would say a grinder, a guy that you never would count him out. He had to work hard to get to the major leagues. He had to work hard to stay in the major leagues. And, you know, I think you always have a little special place for guys like that. I know I was in that same mold. I was a ninth-round pick. Whit was a ninth-round pick. Undersized, you know, not the type of guys that profile out to be, you know, guys that are able to play at the, you know, at the top of the league and then become, to me, Whit became a leader on this team, a guy who did a lot of special things, and just very happy for him that he has a chance to move. The only thing that I hate is the fact that it just seemed like it ended on a sour note for Whit, and he'll probably be more remembered for some of the things that he shouldn't be remembered for than all the great things he did on the field. But the fact that he got his 1,010, I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. I thought also it was fitting that the last game he played as a Royal here in Chicago He essentially won the ball game for us with his home run and his defensive play at second base. So that's how I remember Witt.
Yeah. Jeff Montgomery's our guest. Is it easy to, I mean, they're professionals, and you say that, you know, you shed the distraction or whatever in the clubhouse as the trade deadline comes and goes, and then you got to go out and play a ball game, and then it's just, you know, you're a professional. Is it easy to do that when somebody like Whit Merrifield, who has been, you know, in that clubhouse and has been the mainstay, and for these younger guys, he's been the voice. I mean, obviously close with Nicky Lopez, and you saw the emotions last night from Nicky Lopez after the game was over, and it seemed like he was on the verge of, when talking with the media, on the verge of, you know, tears when he was discussing the relationship with Whit Merrifield and just that's the business and everything. Is it as easy as just saying, are you professional, go out and play? Or can that have an impact that, you know, that happens at 5 o'clock and 2 hours later you got to be playing a game, and a guy that's Whit Merrifield, who you've played with literally every day since he's played in all these games, is no longer there, and a Cam Gallagher and some other moves as well. Is it as easy just to go out and go, okay, well, let's play a ball game. This guy's gone and next man up.
Well, excuse me, I think from a game standpoint, yeah, you get ready and you do it, but you're still thinking before and after the game about that player, because if you think about Whit Merrifield and say Nicky Lopez, for example, Whit became the guy who essentially mentored a lot of players who are wearing Royals uniforms right now, and they looked up to him. And those are the players that you remember most. And again, going back to my days, I remember when I came over to the Royals, guys like Mark Gubisaw and guys like Brett Saberhagen and Steve Farr, those guys, they help you get through the tough times, and they help mold you as a player, and you become good friends, and you rely on them. And I think when you get to that stage and you have that impact on players, and I know guys, the younger guys like Mike Sweeney, for example, who came in after I had kind of gotten to that point where I was somewhat of a leader on our team. Mike Sweeney today will thank me for the information and the experience I shared with him. So it's just part of the process. But yeah, when you lose a guy who you looked up to and was a guy who helped get you through some tough times, yes, it can be very emotional.
Jeff Montgomery's our guest. In Toronto, when the players weren't there, Nicky Lopez was the one that talked after games. And last night in Chicago, Nicky Lopez was the one that talked after a game. I don't think that's coincidental, Monty. If somebody's going to step up and be a leader, that guy's also somebody that, in a loss, will also then talk to the media. It just sort of goes along with the job. Whether Nicky Lopez volunteered to do that or it would just seem like a natural ascension, it doesn't feel like it was a it doesn't feel like it was coincidental, right? That Nicky Lopez is the guy that's now talking for the team in Toronto, and then last night, that it feels like maybe that natural progression for him is now going to be that leader in the clubhouse.
Yeah, and I think Nicky's the perfect player to be that voice, because a lot like Whit Merrifield, a guy who didn't really profile out to be a player that's going to have credentials that you're going to look at the end of his career and check off a lot of boxes. But Nicky Lopez, a grinder type player, just like Nick or just like Whit, and he's got those leadership qualities and characteristics. We knew that about Nicky Lopez when he arrived in Kansas City. And when you have someone like Whit Merrifield and even the Salvador Perez, who are maybe the more vocal leaders, you have to kind of take a little bit of a back seat. And then once those players are gone, like now that Whit Merrifield's gone, Nicky Lopez, probably that will accelerate maybe the timeline for him really becoming that vocal leader, the guy who's going to be standing up after a loss and talking about the game to the media and really kind of assuming that type of role or position.
Visiting with Jeff Montgomery is presented by Sandlot Goods, Kansas City's only local hat manufacturer. Shop their hats and more online at sandlotgoods.com or at their stores located in all Made in KC marketplaces. So as the actual game goes on last night, Brad Keller's an interesting guy because, the highs and lows of his season, it just feels like, he's a guy that is dependent on his defense. And sometimes placement in the infield goes a long way. And there were some slow hit balls, some low exit velocities that got through the middle because of placement or where guys typically would go. He's one, like, is there a consistency, ever a consistency with Brad Keller if he is so dependent on his defense that game in and game out, the guys behind him are the ones that are going to have to pick him up and play such a really good game in placement and balls finding defenders and things like that? Because it feels like the up and down for Brad Keller can be attributed to just simply he's a guy that, you know, the seven guys behind him are incredibly important.
Right. He does rely a whole lot on defense, particularly infield defense. And you're right, a lot of balls found their way through the infield, especially early in that game last night. And then there were some balls, you know, a couple of times in, I think, whatever inning it was, third or fourth inning there, could have had a couple double plays and been out of innings. Didn't score in those innings, but just kind of a, didn't really allow him to get into that that real good rhythm, that real good feel, and it ran his pitch count up a little bit. But he's been, to me, over the last couple of years, the guy that is very like that bad luck guy in two regards. One, seems like we never score runs when he's on the mound. And two, when we have those shoddy defensive games or don't make all the plays, he's kind of the guy that's on the mound. So he's really, to me, has been that guy. And to me, last night, he had pitched two very good games against the White Sox earlier this season. Coming in last night, I felt really good about him. And it seemed like the White Sox changed their approach. I mean, Brad Keller's a guy that goes out and he attacks the strike zone. He goes at hitters and does exactly what you want pitchers to do. And that's pitch to their strengths and attack hitters and trust their stuff. But it seemed like the White Sox had a game plan last night where they are going to be on the attack. I think Keller threw 74% strikes last night, the highest he's thrown all season long. But any pitch that was in the strike zone, it seemed like the White Sox hitters, they were just ready to swing. They were on the attack, putting the ball in play. And a lot of times they put the ball in the play, we had nobody there to defend it. So it just added up to the most runs he's given up, most hits he's given up, and just an outing that hopefully he can flush and move on to the next one.
Real quick, the other night, Daniel Lynch on the mound and out-dueling Michael Kopech, which isn't easy to do. He gets into the sixth inning. He gives up only six base runners, seven strikeouts, no walks there for Daniel Lynch. It seemed like he was a guy that was figuring it out a little bit. His, you know, two starts before the blister and the cut and things that had been bothering him, and then he comes back and looks like maybe that finger's okay and seven Ks, no walks. So outside of the couple of starts when he was bothered by the finger, those previous three starts, 22 strikeouts and seven walks in that time. So is there a fear that this is just maybe something Daniel Lynch may have to deal with? Or can they get it figured out and move on, and Daniel Lynch can start to get back into his development and maybe more of what took place on Monday night and how good he looked against the White Sox?
Yeah, I think kind of a little slice of what Daniel Lynch is all about, and also a good example of what it's like when you're not having to deal with issues. Now, you think about an injury being a blister to your finger under the throwing hand, doesn't seem like a lot. But when it's every time you throw a baseball, there's that concern or fear that it's getting worse, and prohibits your ability to command the baseball the way that you need to. Just takes away some concentration probably as much as anything. But when he's healthy, and like we saw in his last outing and really leading up to those blister issues, I mean, here's a guy that has plus-plus stuff. So I think he's got a real good chance to be one of those guys you can count on, a dependable starting pitcher. Certainly one of the guys the Royals need to be that type of guy they can count on from beginning of the season into the end. Now, that, you know, obviously incorporates how do you deal with this blister issue. I've known a lot of players who have had blisters. Oftentimes they seem to rear their ugly head at the worst time. He's never had that issue, so it's not been an ongoing situation for him to deal with blisters. There were a couple games in Kansas City. It was extremely hot, extremely humid, and they feel like that maybe led a little bit to what created that situation. So maybe knowing that now, he can maybe put a little more emphasis on trying to develop calluses in those areas where he had the blisters and maybe not have that happen in the future. But certainly happy with the way he threw the ball, and again, want to see a whole lot more of that.
Last one for you, Jeff Montgomery, presented by Sandlot Goods. Vin Scully passing away last night. We all get the news that, you know, right as the Royals game was ending, the Dodgers put out that information. What do you think of when you think of Vin Scully?
I think of a guy that didn't say a lot, but what he said, it had meaning. And so many calls that he made were just monumental calls. And to me, he was one of a kind. I think he broadcast almost 70 years for the Dodgers, just unbelievable record for what he was able to accomplish, and certainly will be missed. And he has been missed since he left the booth, but certainly, you know, feel for all the Dodgers fans and baseball fans that lost one of the greats.
Yeah. Jeff Montgomery, Bally Sports, Royals Hall of Famer, Royals Insider, presented by Sandlot Goods. Monty, appreciate it, sir. Have a good call today, and we will talk next week, sir.
Okay, thanks, Jason. Appreciate you having me.
All right, there's Jeff Montgomery, presented by Sandlot Goods, Kansas City's own Sandlot Goods, Kansas City's only local hat manufacturer. Shop their hats and more online at sandlotgoods.com or at their stores located in all made-in KC marketplaces. That's Sandlot Goods. Monty, Royals insider, Royals Hall of Famer with Bally Sports, the final game of the series with the White Sox, the rubber match. We'll see what they can do today. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We got Chiefs on the docket. We got Mick Schaefer coming up later on in the show. More Zone right after this. It's a Wednesday edition. It's Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in the Zone with Jason Anderson.
You know, Jason's ego has been put to the side. He doesn't say anything in the media. He just stays positive, keeps a smile on his face, and keeps cashing checks. But right now, it's time for Jason to go because he's been a puppet for a long time.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, thank you to Jeff Montgomery, presented by Sandlot Goods. We'll hear from the Chiefs in St. Joe coming up in the next hour. And then Mick Schaefer will join us later on in the show. Still plenty of thoughts on the trade deadline for the Royals and what took place and what they acquired, what they did, who they traded. We also have some giveaways that we're going to be doing. We've been giving away tickets to the 100-year anniversary for WHB. And now we also have tickets for a new movie that is out at theaters, coming to theaters.
I'm actually not sure if it's
bootleg.
I'm not sure when it officially hit theaters.
So just bootleg. You can only get it via bootleg. Okay.
Or if you come to this premiere, you can see it early.
Amazing.
I am really excited about this movie. I don't know if you have seen the trailer for Bullet Train. I've seen it twice. I don't even know. I can't remember the movies that I saw this trailer play before. But whenever I saw, I was like, oh, that's exciting. We should make time to go see that. This seems right up my alley. And then, all of a sudden, we're having an 810 premiere party, is what I'm going to call it, at the B&B Theaters. That's at 135th and Antioch B&B tomorrow night. And so we have some tickets we can give away. I don't know if you want to just... We have something we can give to callers. We can pick a texter of the day. Maybe you say, hey, I'm a texter who wants to go to Bullet Train tomorrow night. I don't know how we want
to,
you know,
yeah,
set
no,
all
we
that up.
To figure something out there.
We got a handful of tickets that we can give away today. If you want to come in and hang out with us?
So how many
hosting pair? The little event beforehand? Five pairs.
Five pair. Okay.
Each show is giving away five pairs. We got five
each
pairs
show?
To give away today.
Give away five pairs.
We got five pairs to give away here
My
in the zone.
Goodness.
Look at that.
There we go. Okay, so we'll be doing that throughout the show. Let's go ahead and give away one right now.
I like it.
One pair, not one single ticket.
Yeah.
One pair. Although one single ticket would be perfectly fine with me. I love going to the movies by myself. I enjoy it. 913-3810-810. What do we want to do? Caller number 8? Caller number 10?
Let's go caller number 47.
Caller 47. Okay. There we go.
Buckle in, Beards.
What number movie is this for Brad Pitt? That's go through his filmography.
Lot.
How many movies? That's the number, caller, we're going with.
It's the B&B Theaters at 135th Street in Antioch.
Oh,
caller 135.
That's exactly right. So,
Beards,
do we want to go caller 135?
Beards, you unhappy?
Well, how about...
The way things are going?
Let's see. Tomorrow's the 4th. We could just do caller 4.
People probably...
I like that option better.
Just open up the phone lines, man!
Go caller number 8. Caller number 8 seems reasonable.
Okay. Or we can go caller number 82, because that's when he enrolled at Mizzou, was in 1982. We can go 82. You want to do that? Let's do that.
Let's call
for
number
Mizzou.
82.
Call a number 8 or 2. Whatever.
Ooh, that's good. Well,
whatever Beards decides.
I know which one Beards will decide, and
you go.
Probably already missed your window.
Pair of tickets to Bullet Train, the premiere coming up tomorrow night. 913-912-4810 is the text line, and we'll give away tickets on the text line.
And
as well.
I should also give away the times. Beards can tell you the times if you want. That's tomorrow night. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, tomorrow night.
probably after close of business. After COB.
It's not a matinee. No. It's not a matinee. It's in the evening.
Well, I mean, I'd love to. Winning tickets would be great, but I only have to pay $5 to go see that movie anyway. It's at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
I don't know if I can sit the whole thing in my lunch break. I think it's a pretty long movie.
Businessman special, you know, kind of like a baseball game. 913-912-4810 is the text line. We talked a little bit at the beginning of the show about the trade deadline and Whit Merrifield going to the Blue Jays. Cam Gallagher, we're talking with Jeff Montgomery there about sort of the emotions that go along with it and all of that stuff. As we get into Chiefs in the next hour, and we'll have a better idea of like who's going to talk and what time they're going to be talking as well. Just a quick, you know, question as it may bleed over into the next hour. Did they do enough? Josh, to you, did the Royals do enough in transactions? It feels like a loaded question.
I think it's a pretty simple answer, even if it is an obvious question.
I don't. So I love that.
I think I'm just wondering if we're going to, how much time we'll need to really hit all corners of this one. Because no, I think that the simple answer is no.
Okay.
They didn't do enough yesterday, and JJ Piccolo spoke to this, and we'll keep hearing that audio throughout the show as well.
Yep.
But whenever he talks about, Todd Lebo asked, was this a transactional day? I don't think it was. He talked about the relievers. We'll hear from him in a little while to hear the logic. But I still see the Royals operating in a position of doing what we have to do, and then very little more if possible. Yesterday they did what they had to do.
We traded Whit, get off our backs.
It could have been proactive.
Here's my Cliff Notes more complicated answer. I go no and yes. Did they do enough?
Wow.
Did they do enough yesterday? No. Did they do enough overall in terms of trading and moving pieces? If Santana and Benintendi were traded yesterday, and it was Santana, Benintendi, Whit Merrifield, Cam Gallagher, I wonder what the feeling today would be.
Still bad.
Okay.